the classical scene with Victor Halls. I'm so excited to be sharing some choral music and the love of that today with a very special guest friend of mine, Matthew Abernathy from the Master's Chorale, etc. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi, it's such a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad that you were able to do this with your busy schedule. You're involved in so many things in the area. Mm-hmm. And he and I go back for two college days.
We do.
Mm-hmm. And have mutual teachers as well from University of Michigan. I studied orchestral conducting. He, of course, studied choral conducting, but there was overlap between all of our amazing professors. And there's some real Michigan pride here because you just became a full-time professor there, correct?
Yes, I'm the new associate director of choirs at University of Michigan. So it's kind of going full circle for me. Although it's funny because I was thinking the other day, there's like five of us in the state of Florida, all from about the same time at Michigan.
That's true, right. We have Chelsea Gallo. Here is the Florida Orchestra's resident conductor.
Yep, and Kevin Fitzgerald is the associate conductor of the Jacksonville Symphony.
That's correct.
Todd Craven is up at the Northwest Florida Symphony.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, it's amazing.
We had enough of the Midwest weather.
Apparently.
Decided Florida was the place to be, and it's great. I'm actually from Jacksonville, of course, but it's still just worked out. Fortunes brought me here.
Amazing.
So I love our connection there. And so what we just played for our intro music, which I thought was so fitting, was a little bit of Look at the Stars from Jocelyn Hagen's The Notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci. And this is a really special piece that you are going to be conducting soon with the Master's Chorale, right?
Yeah. So we have a concert next week. The Master Chorale of Tampa Bay will be doing a concert that we produce on our own that will be performing on Friday night at Hyde Park United Methodist Church and on Saturday night at the Palladium Theater. And there are a couple of pieces on it. One of the big ones is this piece called The Notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci by Jocelyn Hagen, which is a super cool piece that's been getting a lot of play in the last few years. It's not surprisingly, it draws words from Leonardo da Vinci's sketchbooks. So it's just literally what he was writing in his journals about things. So he's anything from, you know, mathematical proportions to what he believed about painting. I mean, it's really amazing text. And she sets it in a really vibrant way. But the best part of this is that it's actually tied to these visuals. So there's a movie that plays during it that lines up and syncs exactly with the music as it goes by. So you have this really immersive multimedia experience. The graphics are super cool. The music is really fun to listen to. And because we're doing this piece all about a great inventor, we're pairing it with a commission by a composer named Natalie Draper, who's on the faculty at Syracuse University and is a mutual friend of mine. And she wrote this amazing piece for us because I told her, you know, we're doing this thing about Da Vinci. I would love to do something that's sort of about invention or inventiveness. You know, let me know what you can come up with. And she came back and said, well, what if I did something about Marie Curie? So we have this set of pieces that she's drawn some text from Marie Curie's journals and created a beautiful opener for us for string quintet and choir that is sort of the perfect foil for this concert. So it's all about invention, inventiveness. It's about 70 minutes long total. So this is a great concert. If you've never been to a classical show before and you're thinking you want to try something, come to this, no intermission, really, really great starting point.
That's awesome. As soon as I saw that on your website, I put it in my own calendar so I can go to one of your shows and was really excited to ask you more about it. So again, those shows are on April 25th and 26th. And you mentioned this piece is based on Marie Curie. Would you tell us more about who that amazing figure is?
Yeah, Marie Curie, one of the only scientists with an element named after her. So she was born in Poland, but really sort of got adopted by the French. She worked at studied and taught at the Sorbonne, and Curium, the element, is named after her. And so
didn't realize that.
It's actually named after her. And in fact, a little fun, not so fun tidbit, she actually died because of her research, because curium is highly radioactive. Mm. And so she was exposing herself to all this radiation over and over and over again. And so that's what ultimately killed her. Her materials, her notebooks, her journals, all of her research stuff is sealed in lead to be buried, and her coffin is sealed in lead because she is so radioactive.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So you like you can view her things, but you have to wear like a hazmat suit to see her documents. It's really wild. But she was early 20th century, you know, pioneer, and of course one of the first women to really get significant scientific recognition. I believe she has a Nobel Prize in science. She may in fact have two if I'm remembering correctly. But she's amazing. And so this whole concert, the goal was to show off these great, brilliant thinkers. And of course, then we have two amazing female composers who have written these pieces for them. So it's really a testament to exceptional creativity.
That's amazing. And what she did in the pursuit of science.
Yeah.
so commendable, and although sad. And that piece also, but the piece by Natalie Draper, also combines texts from a 19th century poet named Christina Rossetti. I'm not really familiar with her.
Yeah, she gets set by a lot of choral music, actually. She's a very popular poet to set because she hits that perfect balance between being lyrical, where the prose really just flows so beautifully. And when you read the poetry on its own, you can already hear the music coming out of it. It's kind of amazing. Mm. But it's also very deep and emotional and compelling and interesting text. There's nothing that's sort of superficial about it. And she hits that mark perfectly. So a lot of composers love to set her. So you'll see this cool foil between some of the Rossetti poems with some of Marie Curie's own quotations sort of interwoven, and how these two women are dialoguing with each other at the same time. It's really cleverly put together. It's a piece I'm particularly proud of to have commissioned.
Yeah, and that's so wonderful that you guys do that work. So what is the process for commissioning a piece, or at least with this particular work, since you are friends with her, yeah. And then how does the Master's Chorale manifest such a collaboration?
Well, this is our 46th year, I believe, and we have an enormous track record of commissioning, actually. A lot of great American composers have written stuff for us. And so we're very proud of that, and it's something that we're lucky to be able to continue. You know, commissioning for me, I keep a running list of people that I hear that I think that's really interesting. I wonder what they would write for us. And then every year, you know, we're lucky to have a commissioning fund. So I start writing to people I'm interested in a couple years out. And usually I know, like I knew I wanted to do this Da Vinci piece. And I was thinking, well, who would write something that would fit kind of the style of this concert? And I'd had Natalie on my list for many years, and said, well, I think this is the year to contact her. And so I wrote to her and said, you know, here are the dates, here's the timeline, this is the kind of ideas I'm thinking about. Are you available? Would you be interested? And then she got back and said yes. And then usually from there, we start having a conversation about, well, what kind of poetry or text or lyrics do we want to use for this? Because there's, you know, so many possibilities. And we go back and forth and eventually kind of settled on this. And then the wonderful and scary thing is then you leave it in the composer's hands. And you wait months and you see what they're doing, and they'll send you an email or a text sometime and say, hey, things are going well. But you just sit there and wait. And then in January, you get a piece of music in your hand and you start looking through it and you start figuring out, okay, is this going to work? How's this going to? And then what's really fun for me is then you start having this dialogue with the composer about like, okay, well, if you want it to go like this, we might have to adjust this here. You know, how do you imagine this section working? And you really get to bring this to life for the first time with no preconceived notion about, well, this is the recording I listen to, so we're going to follow that recording. There is no recording. We're doing this all from scratch, and that's the most interesting thing. And of course, Natalie will be here for the premiere as well, so she'll get to put her stamp on it while we're working. She'll be there for the concert. That is always so fun for me and so fun for the chorus because they really get to interact with the composer. I mean, how often do you get to do that, right? Like, we love playing Brahms, but he's not going to show up and say, well, that's not really how I wanted this to go.
Right, exactly. One of my conducting teachers would joke if a text message or a cell phone went off during a rehearsal or concert, he goes, that is a message from the composer. He is pleased, you know. But otherwise, right, we have the wonderful opportunity with living composers to have that dialogue. And especially, it's so satisfying after putting in all of the work and rehearsing the piece and getting to know it. And then you meet the person. You bring them in to meet the choir and they see their face and get the chemistry in the room. It's really a thrilling thing. Recently, I was helping out with the Tampa Bay Symphony, and they have a fabulous commissioning project as well. I think it's eighth season. Mm-hmm. And they do a call for scores for their orchestra. And three composers flew in to hear the world premieres of their pieces.
Oh, wow.
And then the symphony chose ultimately two of those pieces to perform, one on this May's concerts and one next season. And to see the audience's reactions, to hear their applause for everybody, to hear a little bit of words from each composer to get a sense of their personality was great. And I, as their assistant conductor, had been studying the music, studying the scores, and trying to imagine who these people were. I didn't look them up on purpose. I just wanted to meet them in person. And my impressions weren't always exactly the same, but I could tell that, you know, they had sophistication and sensitivity, and it's just fantastic to hear music for the first time.
Yeah.
I tried to look up some of Natalie Draper's music and listened to a few bits of it, and it was very interesting, and I can't wait to hear this. Of course, I couldn't look up this particular piece because it's a world premiere, so definitely something we all want to see. Let's talk about the other piece on the concert some more. So that is, again, by Jocelyn Hagen. Are you friends with her as well?
You know, interestingly, I have met her and worked with her before, although this piece had been released, you know, she had written this before I'd met her. But I lived in Minneapolis for 6 years, and she lives in the same area and is a very well-regarded composer nationally, but especially in Minnesota. She's a beloved name there. And you know, I love her music. It's always really fascinating to do it because she has this really interesting way of playing with text and playing with rhythm and playing with harmony. You know, someone described her once that, you know, she's really interested in pop music. She really likes pop music. And you can feel a little bit of that in the way that she writes, that there's a playfulness to how the rhythms work. There's a playfulness to the kind of words she chooses so that things don't fit maybe perfectly squarely within the bar lines, we would say. You know, when you look at it on the page, sometimes the rhythms look much more complicated than they actually are when, you know, rather than stepping back and sort of feeling how the music goes. And there's always a sense of like feeling the rhythm, feeling the groove that she sets up really well.
Mm. Okay, yeah, that's so interesting. And when you internalize music like that, mm-hmm. it feels so perfectly natural. It may be scary at first on the page, and many people who've studied music and may look at the page may feel a little bit of hesitation at some things like that.
But you definitely do.
You spend the time with your choir. How often does the Master's Chorale rehearse, by the way?
So we meet every Tuesday from 7:30 to 10. And, you know, every project is a little bit different. So we average, I would say, 7 to 8 rehearsals and then a concert week. So
okay.
It's a pretty fast turnaround if you really start adding these up. So, I mean, we do, I think our last count is 7 major concerts a year. And then we do education outreach things. We just did an education program at the Palladium 2 weeks ago. We do small concerts. You know, occasionally there are touring shows. We just sang with Andrea Bocelli back in February. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a very busy group, but the main bulk of our rehearsal are Tuesday nights. And we work fast. You know, it's a great group of people mm-hmm. who really show up ready to work and excited to learn and to dig into stuff that's new for them and challenging. And this is one of those pieces that really has brought them to life.
Yeah, that is a pretty quick turnaround for a world premiere and a regional premiere, I would assume. Or, I mean,
I think it's certainly the first time it's been done in Tampa, certainly.
Very new music. When did Jocelyn compose this?
Oh, gosh, when would this have been done? I'm going to say somewhere around maybe 2015-ish.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the exact date, but it would have been around that time. I know it's been done in Florida, but it's definitely not been done in Tampa Bay. So this is certainly a premiere for the area.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's fresh music, definitely, by any standard. I actually was researching her some more and found a TED Talk that she gave about this piece. And it was so fascinating. I highly recommend looking that up. Anybody who's listening, it's Jocelyn Hagen's TED Talk on her piece. And she discusses the inspiration for it and the software that is going along with it. It's a really fascinating dialogue between animation, the video components, and the music. And she kind of turns it on its head from the standard, which is you go to see your favorite movie and you may not be completely aware of the soundtrack, but it's completely influencing you. Mm-hmm. At every turn, it's giving you the emotions, it's giving you context clues, and if you were to switch the music out for the wrong thing, it would completely ruin it.
Right.
but it's still somewhat subservient to the image. And she wanted to flip that with this new software so that they could be playing the music and then the images run by a live person could adjust and fit along with the music. So I'm very curious to see what that looks like on the screen in front of you all and how you've been learning to look at that as well.
Well, the truth is we haven't yet.
Okay.
So we will do that in our tech week is when we will start putting that together. I have a lot of friends who have done this program before, and they've all said it's very straightforward to put together, but it's really visually effective. I mean, there's a great promo video actually on YouTube of this DaVinci piece, and it gives you sort of a glimpse at some of these images, and it's so cool to just see how they serve the music. They just embellish what you're already hearing that's really compelling. They just add that extra component to it that I think, you know, we all are kind of in the habit of seeing now. You know, we're listening to music while we're on our phone or we're driving and we're listening to something. I mean, I was just talking to a friend the other day and they were saying, you know, when's the last time you laid on your bed and listened to a whole album? And I was like, I don't know, since high school, maybe.
It's such a wonderful thing to do, but we have to find the time for it.
Yep. And
it's like a spa day, but auditory.
Like it. Yep.
It's important to do that. So just to remind folks, I'm here with Matthew Abernathy, and this is the Classical Scene. I'm Victor Hulls, and we're out broadcasting through Radio St. Pete. Very excited to be listening to some of this music and talking about their upcoming concerts. Let's play another clip from this piece. Mm. So this is Jocelyn Hagen's. It's from the Notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci, which she calls a symphony, right?
Yeah.
But for voices and a few instruments.
Yep.
And this is one of the movements called Look at the Stars, and this is the thrilling opening of that movement. I think that is such gripping, phenomenal composition.
It's really expertly written. I mean, you know, Jocelyn is an extraordinary composer. I mean, she writes in a lot of different styles and a lot of different mediums and for difficulty levels from extremely complicated stuff for professional ensembles like Cantus to very accessible, you know, elementary or middle school choir things. So, I mean, she's someone to look up if you're interested in choir. She has tons of repertoire it's looking up. But this piece in particular, I think, is really one of her best. It's so marvelously put together. It tends to alternate between a movement with the orchestra and the choir to a movement that's entirely a cappella. The lyrics are so interesting. I mean, again, you're just taking these little snippets of Da Vinci's notebook and you're getting this picture of Da Vinci the composer, Da Vinci the inventor, Da Vinci the philosopher. Hmm. And you get this all sort of interspersed so that you actually feel like you read a biography by the end of this concert. And then she does it with this bright, crystalline, very exciting orchestration for it that really helps this stuff jump off the page. It's a outstandingly well-written piece, and it's one worth seeing live. I mean, there isn't a recording. So if you think, well, I won't go to the concert, I'll just listen to it online. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for you, you won't find the whole thing online, so you have to see it live.
Maybe we'll get some wonderful recordings out there soon, because that's a really important thing to do for our living composers.
It is.
Right. And not just to be streamed for fractions of pennies each time, but to really share them and put out their names and get that music there. So can you tell us about what that particular piece was about? They're talking about time, of course, in Look at the Stars. And the video is a phenomenal background. I wish I could show the video over the radio. Just imagine it, all of these stars and the cosmos being overlaid on the performers. And again, I can't wait to see what it will look like in person in the visuals.
Well, you know, Da Vinci was a polymath. You know, we think of him in a lot of different ways. I think he was, of course, the great painter that we know him to be. But I think he thought of himself more as an inventor and scientist. I mean, mm-hmm. some of his really big discoveries were about, like, human anatomy. And you look at his sketchbooks, and he's drawing these meticulously drawn pictures of anatomical, you know, what do we call them? Anatomical sketches around, like, this muscle attaches to that muscle, to this bone. And so this first movement is really sort of broad picture. It's talking about that time, you know, the text is, oh, time, consumer of all things. So it's really about, you know, at the end of the day, time is going to consume everything. So we want to be as open to the world as we can be, and really take in all the possibilities that are there. And you see this, I think, in Da Vinci's life, that he's exploring life through the lens of a scientist, through the lens of an artist, through the lens of an inventor, through the lens of a philosopher. And you know, you've all perhaps seen the picture of Da Vinci's flying machine, maybe. It's got the little corkscrew on the top of it and some wings and propellers, and they don't know if it would actually work. But, you know, he's a person who's imagining what if we could fly? What would it look like to do that? And I think this whole piece is about possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also invented some very funky instruments. I believe there's a kind of bowed piano thing that has this rotating hair instead of a violin bow so that you can play the notes. And somebody recreated it recently. That's another cool thing to check out on the YouTubes. yes, but there's another line, I think, that's in the piece that Da Vinci said, an artist or a painter is not admirable if he is not universal.
Yeah, there's lots of interesting quotes in here that, you know, he says a painter's not admirable unless he is universal, which I think speaks to really sort of the Renaissance ethos of trying to develop these universalisms, right? That there's these things that apply to all things. And Da Vinci was, you know, you see this throughout here, that Da Vinci's trying to apply these quote-unquote rules of nature. This is, you know, sort of Newtonian ideas, that there are the rules that govern everything. And so his view is that to be a great painter, if your subject doesn't appeal to, if it doesn't speak to all of humanity, then it's not really great art. He also talks about that you have to have great technique. You know, it's no good to just be an artist, but you have to have great technical skill and precision. Otherwise, you know, you are just sort of making things that are pretty. And if you think about, you know, if you've ever been to a museum and seen Renaissance paintings, some of those you look at and think, is that a human? They look so out of proportion. You know, you've seen these tapestries where their necks are really long and their arms are long and their fingers are long. Well, of course, in the Renaissance, they're trying to figure out, well, how do we actually depict someone? What are the proportions between the fingers to the hand and the hand to the elbow and the elbow to the head? And so he's really is interested in, well, if you're going to be an artist, then you have to have developed some real technical understanding in order to be effective at that.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just making it look pretty, it's mathematics and engineering and creativity all combining. And that's what is also happening in this concert.
Yeah.
With Jocelyn Hagen's masterpiece plus this interesting program that gives us these animations that are adjusting to the sound.
Exactly.
It's really, really cool. And she also read another quote from some of Leonardo da Vinci's pages that inspired her for the work. It's kind of a famous one. I really love it. I'll read it now. It's that a painting is a poem seen but not heard. A poem is a painting heard but not seen. Hence, these two poems or two paintings have exchanged the senses by which they pierce the intellect. Something from his pages over 500 years ago, and such an inspiration for her new multimedia symphony. It's a really interesting thought. So again, these amazing concerts are going to be on April 25th. That's up at the Hyde Park United Methodist Church, and April 26th at the Palladium. Both of those are at 8:00. And I hope everybody will check it out, and I'll see you there. That same weekend, the Florida Orchestra is also performing the Pictures at an Exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky / Ravel. Going to be an amazing concert with some Korngold and other special surprises. Going to be excellent. And then there are several other things coming up that we're collaborating on. One thing is the Sing Out concert of Tampa Bay, and that will be with the Sing Out chorus, so to speak, which I understand you're not involved in it this year, but you have been in the past, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's a great event. It's, you know, it's really, it's a wonderful opportunity that the orchestra has created for people to just get up and sing. There's very, you know, sort of limited amount of rehearsals. You just get a chance to sing, get yourself back into the habit. And, you know, what I really love about it, selfishly, is that sing there a little bit. If you feel like you've got to scratch that itch again, then come check out Master Chorale. This would be the time to sort of do Sing Out Tampa Bay, see how you're feeling, then come audition for Master Chorale, where you get to perform with Florida Orchestra, get to commission these new works. It's a really well-rounded opportunity.
Yeah, I hope that serves as a springboard for people, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that it might be sort of full, but it's worth checking out if you want to try to come and join us for Sing Out. It'll definitely be a very fun family event. That's on May 14th. And then I saw online that you're also doing a German Requiem by Brahms.
I am. I'm also the choir director at University of Tampa. So the following week we'll be doing the Brahms German Requiem with my university choir, which will be great fun. It's, I mean, that is, you know, I'm lucky in so many ways that I get to do these great pieces back to back, that I do from one masterwork, you know, modern masterwork, to one of the great classical masterworks of, I mean, the Brahms German Requiem is one of the most, I don't know if perfect is the right word, but one of the most exceptionally composed, emotionally compelling, but just tightly wound pieces that I can think of. It is excellent for all the performers on stage and quite tricky.
Yes, it's delicious music.
It's delicious music.
Desert island music.
Oh, that absolutely.
Can be heard forever, and you will always hear something new. It's just wrap me up in a warm coat of Brahms.
Yes, please.
Ein Deutsches Requiem. So that's on May 3rd at University of Tampa.
Yes.
Okay. I'll try to make it to that as well.
Yeah, please do.
I love it. I'm also somewhat of a singer.
In fact, you and I have done some singing together, I believe,
that's
too.
True.
As a countertenor, I think.
Yes, yes. I do sing some countertenor. But I don't sing any soloistic stuff. I'm not very good at vibrato, but I can sight read and match pitch and blend. So I've sung a lot of Renaissance music and Baroque music and new music with choirs, and really love that. I haven't done it in a minute, but I think of that as a profound part of my musical life.
I mean, it really changes your concept of playing. I know from all my instrumentalist friends who sing, they approach their instrument completely differently because of it.
Yeah, one of my favorite compliments that I've received from people over the years is that it seems like you're breathing with your playing, and you are playing a phrase in a way that is connected to the breath and physicality, and it's just so meaningful that way.
Yeah, it really you can tell the people who feel it that way. It changes everything.
Yeah. And then perhaps the big, most exciting collaboration at the end of the year is when the Master's Chorale gets to join us again for the Florida Orchestra's season finale. And that is, actually, I'm going to make this a little quiz first. Does anybody recognize this fun music? So that, of course, is from the wonderful Third Symphony by Gustav Mahler, and that's our season finale. Mm-hmm. That music is just so bright. It puts a smile on my face every time, no matter what. And it starts off with a youth choir, or a boys choir, technically Knabenchor, and then also a Frauenchor of high female voices. And they're singing, they're dinging the bells of heaven and talking about the angels coming down and singing joyfully. It's just an amazing thing. And so tell us about your involvement with that, because I know that it's not going to be the entire choir for that.
Right. So as you said, it's just the women from the Master Chorale who performed on that. And then we're joined with the wonderful Lumina Youth Choir. Is their local youth choir. They do an outstanding program, everything from young elementary age, just learning choir singing, to all the way to actually a group that's going to tour to, I believe, Norway and do some choir competition this summer, and their top group will be joining us as the youth choir for this, singing the little bim bombs that you heard at the beginning. And actually some of their older members will join the women of the Master Chorale and sing with the main chorus. So this is a really cool opportunity for them to get that sort of taste of the pre-professional world. But you know, this movement's always so interesting to me, because this piece is Mahler 3 is one of my top pieces of all time. I mean, especially the last movement of that symphony is just one that every time I just sit there,
the gorgeous adagio,
completely overwhelmed by it.
Yes, there's so many good cello moments too, not to be selfish, but
many good moments. I mean, someone told me once, yeah, you know, you get 3 standing ovations in your life, and I used one at a Mahler 3 concert, because it was just so wow, compelling. And but the last movement is preceded with this very lighthearted moment, mm-hmm, that it's, I think the whole movement's maybe 10 minutes long, 12 minutes long. It's very short. But it's these kids and these women singing, and they're representing the angels coming down from heaven. And it's just this extremely lighthearted, just burst of happiness before the most tender, romantic, beautiful finale. Mm-hmm. And of course, the symphony starts with this epic trombone solo that's much darker. And I mean, it like so many of Mahler symphonies, there's a journey you take from the very beginning to the end that does not always leave you in the place you thought it was going to go. I mean, this is certainly true of the Second Symphony. It's certainly true of the Eighth Symphony. I'm speaking of the choral symphonies, but all of them, First Symphony, same thing. I mean, Mahler is one of those composers that has become kind of cool again after the Bernstein movie, I think, and for good reason, because his music is so powerful.
Absolutely one of my favorite composers of all time. Every time I play anything of his, it's a memorable experience, and I've played a lot of his symphonies now. So this will be my second time performing the Third Symphony when we get to it in May. The first time was actually at University of Michigan.
I'm pretty sure we did that together when we were in school.
You weren't singing in the boys' choir at that time.
I was not singing in the boys' choir.
No, no, no. Two reasons for that. But yeah, and I loved our collaboration last year, again, between Master's Chorale and Florida Orchestra, when we did Mahler's Second Symphony, The Resurrection, which has the glorious, gigantic choir, all of the voices, plus soloists. It's just amazing. I'm so glad that we have that.
Me too.
Here in this community. So it's something wonderful. So that's looking ahead to May 24th and May 25th when we do Mahler 3. But again, we have all of these other things coming up soon, between the German Requiem on May 3rd and most immediately Radiant Visions, the Master's Chorale concert on April 25th and 26th. I'm so happy that we could talk today and listen to some of this delightful music. It's wonderful to hear all of your stories about it and hear your deep thinking about this music as well.
Oh, thank you. It's really a delight.
And congratulations again on your new appointments.
Thank you. I will very much miss all my wonderful friends and colleagues and musicians and the area of Tampa Bay. It's a bittersweet thing for me.
I'm sure that you'll come back and visit us sometime perhaps do some more world premieres and amazing collaborations in this area. Bring with you your wonderful spirit and collaboration.
Certainly.
Yay. Well, thank you again for listening to this episode of The Classical Scene. I'm Victor Hulls, and thank you one last time, Dr. Matthew Abernathy.
Thank you.